Edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we're delving in, I say delving every time, don't I? Today we're dipping into one of my favorite genres.
We're spelunking.
We are. Oh, perfect. There we go. We're spelunking into one of my favorite genres. I'm a big fan of, new wave and alternative rock and J-pop recently. But I also have always had a love for power pop and bands like the Smithereens and Nick Lowe, who's also kind of Brit poppy, but certainly kind of founded the power pop sound, Jellyfish. And today's band, also kind of in that same Jellyfish vein, you would have easily sold me on a double bill of this band and Jellyfish in the 90s. We are talking today about the Posies and John Auer. A great library of music from these guys, as far as like a very consistent foundation, but different stuff layered on top of that foundation.
The two of them are amazing songwriters as a duo, and then when you layer in the musicians that they found to kind of help fill in the spots, which was a pretty heavy rotation of people.
It was, yeah.
The fact that they were able to stay consistent really does rest on the shoulders of John Auer and Ken Stringfellow.
Yeah, definitely does. And I mean, they are the they're the Lennon McCartney of the Posies, or the Difford Tilbrook of the Posies. I mean, there's so many examples you can find of this, with like a band that's founded on the backs of two very strong members. And when one of those members is absent or not involved, you definitely can tell.
Yeah. Well, it was really interesting listening through John Auer's solo work. It sounds a lot like the Posies. And I've listened to Ken Stringfellow's solo work. It doesn't sound anything like the Posies. So it was interesting to see that his were the influences that kind of guided the Posies sound.
Sure.
But it wasn't the Posies without Stringfellow's additions to it. So it's a great blend.
It's a perfect collaboration. So John Auer co-founded the Posies. He was also a founding member of the band Sky Cries Mary, and he was a member of the Squirrels. I didn't know that. Oh, that's cool. Lucky Me, Jean Jacket Shotgun, and Chariot. None of those besides the Squirrels have I heard of, and had no idea he was a member of the Squirrels. Really bizarre band that I think one of the only things I know that they've done – well, I take that back. A couple things I know they've done, one of which was a cover of The Hustle. That combines Seasons in the Sun and The Hustle into one cover. Yeah.
Okay.
And they did a track by track cover album of, oh, what was it? Now I've got to find it in my library here.
I'm betting the Squirrels didn't last very long just because of attention span.
Well, they kind of went nuts there in the end. the Nutty Squirrels sing a hard Day's Night and Other Smashes. I believe that is, I want to make sure that is the same Squirrels. No, that's a different thing. There's another one that, another Squirrels album, but I think it is a Beatles album now that I see this one. Darn, it's going to drive me nuts. Hold on. I'm still, we're leaving the, that one was totally unintentional.
You cheeky thing.
Oh, jeez. Let's see. The Squirrels in music, a Seattle pop band, discography. Oh, Dark Side of the Moon. Of course it was Dark Side of the Moon. Yes. The Not So Bright Side of the Moon was the album.
That's something I have to say, is there's a very like overriding, mild to sometimes moderate self-deprecation that runs through a lot of their stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of a humorous, yeah, like a mild humorous self-deprecation that kind of runs through, which makes it, for me, tolerable because I've never heard a band with happier beats and more depressing lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and there are points, they kind of have their blue period and their dark period. I mean,
it's more like dark and suicidal. I mean, they're...
I don't know if I'd go that far. But I would say that, like, you know, their Frosting on the Beater era, the 90s for them was way more grunge influenced.
They were far more angsty than they were
than
in other
pop
periods.
Influenced. Yeah, I think so. I think so. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I sent you a text to kind of sum up my feelings. they are like the Wonders from that movie, That Thing You Do, without the antidepressants.
You mean the Oneaters?
Yeah, the Oneaters. I could hear the Posies doing That Thing You Do easily.
I would love to hear the Posies doing That Thing You Do. I think that would be a great cover for them to choose to do, for sure.
Because it totally fits in exactly their wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the members, we mentioned John Auer. We briefly mentioned Ken Stringfellow, guitars, keys, and vocals for Ken, and then guitar and vocals for John Auer. And then various people that come and go as part of members of the band.
And we'll mention them as we go through.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. John Auer was also a producer. He released an album called Six and a Half, which features a few covers, a really good cover of Madonna's Beautiful Stranger from the Austin Powers films.
I'll run away, but I'm not, so I guess I'll stay, heaven forbid. I'll take my chance on a beautiful stranger. I looked into your eyes, and my world came tumbling down.
And a cover of the Psych Furs' Love My Way, which is really good. Also a full-length record called Songs from the Year of Our Demise. He was a producer for the band UMI, Mono Stereo, Cheap Star, Love Battery, Red Cross, Truly, and Tad.
Now, I've heard of Tad. I know Tad. Tad, very loud grunge band that was popular for a hot second. Yeah, I know Tad.
Okay. It seems like for a while there, we were getting a lot of bands that were three letters long, like Hum and Len. And so maybe that's an Owen Tad.
P-O-D.
Sure. EMF. Why not? So in 2003, he and Ken Stringfellow released an album called Private Sides, or an EP called Private Sides, a six-song EP. And he also played guitar on William Shatner's album Has Been, which is the one that features Joe Jackson and Ben Folds. Well, Ben Folds produced it, but had that great cover of Common People by Pulp that's such a classic.
That album has everybody on it. I don't know how they were able to rope in the people they roped in, but that album has almost every person ever on it.
Totally. And it's funny how Shatner went from such a great album. You feel like, dude, he's finally figured out the way he should be doing music. And then he follows it up with that Looking for Major Tom, which was, I think, an unintentional comedy album.
Yeah, it was a return to form.
It was a return to form, unfortunately. did he just get tired of hearing people say, oh, this is great, giving him accolades?
Maybe he was tired of people taking him seriously.
I guess. That's a bummer. So the two of them, John and Ken, started writing songs together at the University of Washington. They started recording demos in late 87, early 88, and they were so good. It basically, those demos turned into the very first Posies album, which was called Failure. And copied cassettes kind of spread their way around the Seattle area and created a lot of interest in the band. Kind of in that, again, that mid to late 80s era. Arthur Rick Roberts and Mike Musburger joined the band, and that way they could play live shows.
So what was your introduction to the Posies?
It was the second album. It was hearing Golden Blunders on the radio and really, really liking it. We're going to talk about that album here in just a minute. And people who listen to the show regularly won't be surprised by that, because One of my Desert Island Discs was the Posies' second album, Dear 23.
Yeah. So my introduction, I'd never even heard of this band. And the girl I was dating in college, she and I had made a bet. And my end of the bet, if I lost, was have to buy her Failure because she couldn't find it anywhere. And this is pre-internet days. So digging around record stores and trying to find a really rare piece of a really rare recording was kind of hard to do. So I found it and I had bought it ahead of time. And I was, because I liked her, I was going to purposely lose the bet so I could give her the disc. So that's that was my plan. So I lost and we listened to it. And I just remember that Blind Eyes Open told me what I was going to be hearing for the rest of the Posies' career right away. It really defined that opening song on Failure tells you exactly what you're getting. Not a bad thing. It was one of those things where I was like, I have never had a band so clearly define their mission statement in one song.
In one song, yeah. Right? This is our calling card, our business card, thing.
And I ended up, my two favorite albums are Failure and Success. And Success is a bunch of older songs from that period of time they dug up and, you know, dusted off and put on an album at what would have been, I mean, they kind of were looking at it like the end of their career for a while. And then they started coming back. But yeah, Failure and Success are my two favorites. And Blind Eyes really threw the doors open for me as kind of what I was going to be getting from them.
That's cool. That's really cool. For me, it was like I said, it was hearing Dear 23 and then listening to that album with the lyrics in my lap for a long train ride from Grand Central Station down to North Carolina. And the music just syncing up perfectly with not just the visuals I was seeing outside the train window, but also where I was at in my life and just some really, really clever. They're so clever with the wording in that one. So many words with double meanings and puns and stuff like that. My Big Mouth, which is the opening track on that album, it's just so cleverly written. If you read the lyrics while you're listening to it, it's great.
Yeah.
It's really, really clever.
That's one thing I can give him credit for is that the lyrics are more intelligent than you initially think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. That's a good way to put it. It's like, further delving into the lyrics, you find a lot more stuff. I'm going to try not to use the word delving for the entire rest of this episode.
It's kind of like the song, I May Hate You Sometimes, But I'll Always Love You. When you first think that, you're like, that's okay. But then when you get into a relationship, there are times where you get really upset with people, but you don't stop loving them.
Right.
And all of a sudden that song all of a sudden becomes, oh, I get it. That's about a long-term relationship and how it goes through things. Okay. And that was something I didn't catch on the first listen. It took me a number of listens before I figured that out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's clever. It's really clever stuff. Really quickly, let's wrap up with Failure, though, before we move on to Dear 23. The album was released on vinyl by Pop Llama, the label Pop Llama, with all of the songs but one on the record. And then a year later, it was released, or they signed with DGC, which is a section of Geffen Records. And I'm guessing on the CD release, like I have, the missing song from the vinyl was included.
Yeah, I don't know which one it was that got skipped, I'll be honest.
Mm-hmm. No worries. We'll move on to 1990's Dear 23, finally. we've talked about it and teased about it, about talking about this album. This was my introduction to the band. This is the album that got some radio play with primarily the song Golden Blunders. Which is a reference to the Beatles song Golden Slumbers, even going so far as to use some of the lyrics. So Golden Slumbers by the Beatles has the line, boy, you're gonna carry that weight. And the Golden Slumbers song also talks about, I think, pregnancy and how you can't unring that bell, basically.
Is that what the blunder is?
Yeah, I think it is. I think pretty much is. Because it's more like along the lines of a teen pregnancy or an unplanned pregnancy. And the line is, you're going to carry that weight for a long time, boy. You're going to suffer the guilt forever.
Interesting.
Yep. And so it's a little bit of a reference there. And then the snake, the Ouroboros snake, eats its tail because Ringo Starr does a cover of Golden Blunders on his album Time Takes Time with none other than two members of Jellyfish doing backing vocals. So you have a full circle with the whole Beatles and Posies cover there, and then you get even some Splinter power pop connections with Jellyfish.
Splinter power pop sounds like some comic book title that would come out in the late 90s with lots of shoulder pads.
That was actually my the Splinter power pop was my finishing move in wrestling. let's see. They went out on tour, and when they come back, they went into the studio to record. Arthur Roberts wrote and sang three songs. John and Ken didn't think they fit with the band, and they asked him to leave.
Not that they scrapped the songs and say, hey, come back, go back to the drawing boards. No, your songs, we don't like them. Goodbye.
Right. I want to know. I got to look at the lineup and see which of those. I bet I could figure out which of those three songs.
That whole session got scrapped.
Oh, that session was scrapped and referred to as lost sessions. Okay, I think, gotcha. So they didn't include those on Year 23. And then Arthur Roberts went on to be in some other bands. The remaining guys in the band started reworking the music, and in 1992, they started recording their third album. It was going to be called Eclipse initially. Geffen sent them back into the studio to write and record a few hits. Dave Fox joined them for those hits sessions, and they changed the title to Frosting on the Beater, which... again, I don't know if it's a double entendre, but this was definitely more of the grunge, and you can tell it from the opening lyric or the opening guitar strings for Dream All Day. It's like, all right, this is a very different Posies than we left off with.
This is a Posies that was trying to be as Seattle as a Posies band could be.
Right. Yeah, because at this time, I mean, again, this is 1993 Seattle. Nirvana's big. Pearl Jam is just coming into its own, too. Soundgarden, Alice Stone Temple Chains. Pilots. Right. So there is a, you know, in this, not just in this time period on American radio, you're getting grunge, but right there, they're in the heart of it. They're in Seattle. So there's got to be some influence there. From the stuff that they were hearing around them and probably bands that they were opening for or bands that were opening for them.
And I can totally see the record label going, hey, boys, we really like your songs, but can you make them sound a little more grungier?
Exactly. That's a good Seattle accent right there, too. I think I heard it right there. So the big hit on there was it Dream All Day or Flavor of the Month? Because I remember, I guess Dream All Day.
I think Dream All Day was the highest charting, but I think Flavor of the Month was also a super single.
Really cool. Hit number 4 on the modern rock charts. appeared on radio and MTV. They did an extensive tour of the world right around then, but a year later, rumors of a breakup caused Dave to leave the band, and he ended up with the Super Suckers, another band I'm a fan of. In late 94, Brian Young took over drums, and Joe Howard, a.k.a. Joe Skyward, took over the bass guitar. And then they went to the studio to record their next album. Label once again told them they wanted more hits and said it wasn't enough. Go back to work, do some more hits. And Ontario was the result. No, that was me. It was the result of this.
I thought it was another spelling error on my part.
No, you spelled it completely right. I just I don't know what made me say Ontario, like I was from another country. Ontario.
At least it's not David Crabby.
Right. Or as you put in the tab of our show notes, John Auer and the Posesies.
So behind the scenes, I do all the typing and all the misspelling.
That's right. I love it, though. So Ontario, first single from their album, Amazing Disgrace. Again, 1996, keeping with that very same kind of grunge feel to it.
Didn't like this album at all. Sounds like they were trying very, very hard and were expressing their displeasure of even being around each other in the songs, because there are some really uncomfortable things being said about everybody on this album.
Mm. Really?
Well, everybody's a liar.
Oh, yeah. Not just a liar.
Yes. Hey, we're a family show.
That's right. That's right. We're going to refrain from saying any more than that. But yeah, that's true. It was an angrier album, for sure. And you could tell that in their lyrics. It also didn't do very well with fans or critics. It did all right in Europe, and it allowed them enough material and capital to do a tour in 1996 and 97.
And this is when I saw them in Provo, Utah.
Oh, really?
At a place called The Palace.
Okay.
They put on a good show. I liked it.
Yeah. Were they energetic, or was it guys standing on stage just playing their instruments and...
It was a little bit of both, but there was a lot of, stage stuff, and they involved the crowd, so it was good.
Mm-hmm. Were they opening, or were they the headliner?
They were the headliners. They had some local acts that opened for them.
Okay. They also played Voyage of the Aquanauts for Bill Nye the Science Guy's show. I didn't know that.
He's also from Seattle, so that all ties in. He was part of that... Almost Live, that was on Comedy Central, that was syndicated on Comedy Central out of Seattle. So he was on that, and so that's all kind of ties back in with each other.
Okay, very cool. They also started working on projects outside of the Posies. Ken Stringfellow did a solo album called This Sounds Like Goodbye. John joined the band Lucky, and the others worked with other bands. John and Ken would record for the 1997 movie Austin Powers, do a cover with Burt Bacharach for What the World Needs Now. It's on the top of the London tour bus, the scene that takes place on top of the London tour bus. And I think, I want to say there was a part with Elvis Costello in there too, right?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, when I remember I went out and got the soundtrack and was looking for this actual thing because I'm kind of a completist when it was coming to helping get that collection done. And I could never actually put my finger on where they were in the song because there was Burt Bacharach, there was Elvis Costello. It didn't sound very different from the original. So I always kind of chalked it up to something else. I don't know, because it just never really, I could never go, aha, that's where they are.
Right. Well, in the movie, it's very, I think the movie, it's very prevalent. So you get Austin, if I remember correctly, and this is all again from memory, but in the movie, Austin and Elizabeth Hurley are riding on top of the tour bus, and he says something like, "Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Burt Bacharach." And Burt comes out and sings, "What the world needs now." And they go through the first verse with Burt Bacharach doing the vocals, and then it switches to John Auer doing the vocals for the second part.
Oh, okay.
When the camera kind of pulls back and the bus is touring London and all that stuff. So I think you only get Burt Bacharach doing the vocals for the first verse. And I want to say the Elvis Costello thing, it must have been for the second film.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Huh. We'll leave it to you guys. Yeah. Send us an email or let us know what
the... This is the second time that Burt Bacharach's been mentioned on the show, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, don't you remember when I had the musical episode, we talked about Lost Horizon, the musical he wrote.
Right. We should mention him more. I like Burt Bacharach.
Yeah. That'll be the new Dream Theater. I'll just bring him
and on. And Hal David. We can't say Burt Bacharach without mentioning Hal David, because it's like talking about, I don't know.
Elton John without Bernie.
Bernie Top, great comparison, perfect comparison. Yes, exactly. Music and lyrics, people, music and lyrics. In 1997, the band reunited for a small number of shows. We're talking about the Posies. We're back on the Posies now, in case you're keeping track. They reunited for a small number of shows, rumored to be the final Posies shows.
See, and then they release Success. And I'm thinking, oh, end of career, because failure, success.
Right, kind of bookends. Yeah. Exactly. This was a dozen unused older songs released on Pop Llama, including some stuff that they released on a single for Ontario from Amazing Disgrace. They had like five or six bonus B-sides on that single, one of which is on my list. But some of those B-sides ended up on Success, as did a few other tracks. They followed that with a tour and then recorded a live album called Alive Before the Iceberg.
I thought at this point they were done. Anything after this was news to me. I'll be honest. I was floored to know more happened after that.
Totally. Well, there was a wait. There was a long time between this one and the next one. So 1999, John Auer created the John Auer Experience, released two EPs and a full album.
I always think of that title as like a joke that always turns out to be, you know, Hammond Chamberlain, the Hammond Chamberlain Experience.
It is. I mean, it's funny because you get the Jimi Hendrix Experience, and that one doesn't feel like a joke. But then any reference to that, it feels like the Muppets, Dr. Teeth. What was his?
The Electric Mayhem.
Electric Mayhem. I guess that's not the example. But there was something like that where it's like the so-and-so and the so-and-so experience or something like that. It's very tongue-in-cheek. He released two EPs and a full album, Songs from the Year of Our Demise. In 2000, John and Ken played a one-off acoustic show. It was released and called In Case You Didn't Feel Like Plugging In.
Which was actually really good. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed that one.
Never us completely, not completely, like a movie, like a star.
I have it, and I listened to it when it came out, and I didn't listen to it for this thing because it was a live album, and
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I got to listen to it again.
Yeah.
They followed out with another tour in 2001 in support of an EP called Nice Cheekbones.
And a PhD.
Oh, Nice Cheekbones and a PhD. Okay.
Yeah.
And then in 2000, a 4-CD box set was released called At Least At Last, released by friend label to the show, Not Lame Records, who I did a podcast for in the mid-2000s.
Really?
I still had to pay for the box set, yeah. But this is the label that released...
Is it a good box set? Because I can't find it for like less than 90 bucks now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it is really good. I forgot I had it until you brought it up in this in the show notes, though.
Much music that you forget you own a box set.
I know, right? It's embarrassing. I'm trying to do inventory.
Do you use a Dewey Decimal System?
I should, right? Why, it's too much hassle. It also had some B-sides and some covers. And then they also, oh no, I'm sorry. That's from the Greatest Hits set, Dream All Day, Best Of, which had some B-sides and covers. I think the at least at last definitely had some covers as well. They do a great cover of Cheap Trick's Surrender, now that I think about it. That should be in my top five, but it's not because I just thought of it.
You could do a bonus, Brian. We're allowed to do
those. There you go. I'm doing a bonus. Darius Minwalla took over the drums for the band, and Matt Harris played bass in 2001, and the Posies toured sporadically. They came back again 7 years after their last studio album with an album called Every Kind of Light.
Can I give you the little piece of trivia that I love about this one?
Yes, please.
Two of the songs were included with the release of Vista. And I'm sure they're still trying to repair their damage to their rep from that association.
Probably. So that that must be like this will automatically appear in your Windows media.
It was the two free songs they included with Vista so you could sample the media player.
Wow, that's really fun. Well, Love Comes is a really good song, so comes inside you, gets behind you, takes you under its wing. Is it some kind of function of reconstruction of where you've always been? Sense memory that's so passe. Is that what passes for vision these days? I'm glad they included that one. I guess You're Right is a good song, but it wasn't,
no, could, wasn't could my favorite treat, song. Could He Treat You Better and Love Comes Right are the two songs they had on there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait. You wrote Love Comes and I Guess You're Right.
Oh.
We're included Windows Vista
OS. Okay, sorry.
Office. The notes on the right are my notes.
Oh, okay. Hammond. Oh, okay. Sorry. You didn't put a B next to them.
I'm sorry. I should have. I need to quote my notes. I'm a bad note quoter. then the next album came out 5 years later. I mean, big gaps between albums here at this point. 2010 saw the album Blood Candy.
Which I liked a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, it is... It is a good one. Let me scroll down to that one because I did make some notes on that one. There's a song. Well, I guess actually you picked a lot of your songs from there.
I picked two songs from that album. And it really did sound like they'd been listening to a lot of the psychedelic era Beatles when they wrote this one.
Totally.
There's a whole lot of like Lucy in the Sky influenced and stuff in this one.
Yeah, totally hear that. This was recorded in Spain and Seattle and a few other places, but those were the big two. And while they were doing this, Big Star reformed. Alex Chilton's Big Star reformed featuring John and Ken, but it ended when Alex Chilton died of a heart attack in 2013. He was Big Star, and that song by The Replacements, All About Him, is such a loving tribute to Alex Chilton. Not a loving tribute posthumously, because Alex Chilton was still around at the time, but Replacements doing a tribute to him. In 2015, Darius Minwalla died suddenly in his home.
Yeah, I think he might have... I don't remember what he died of. I don't know if it was something that they listed or not, I'll be honest.
Sure. Well, you know, it's the Spinal Tap drummer syndrome.
Sure.
and then in 2016, last year, they released their most recent album, Solid States. Their first single from that album, Squirrel and Snake. Squirrel and Snake. A failed William Tell in a private gambler's hell. Squirrel versus snake. It only hurts when I'm awake. All I can take is the sound of this empty room I have assumed. And they followed it with a big tour of Europe in 2016.
I really, really wanted to like this album. I went into it totally open-minded after Blood Candy. Yeah. And for whatever reason, I just didn't. It didn't stay with me. It just, nothing felt quite right.
That's funny, because I've had the same... I had the opposite reaction. I went into it the same way. I was like, all right, I can't wait to hear what they've been doing since. And I loved it. I thought it was a really good, solid album. As a matter of fact, two of my choices from the playlist, surprisingly, are from this album.
So post-success, we both picked two post-success songs.
That's right. Yes, from two different albums. Interesting.
Yeah.
I could have easily done my entire playlist from Dear 23. But
that would have been an album choice instead of a playlist choice.
Exactly. It would have been cheating. I'm not going to cheat.
You've already did that with one side of Frank Zappa. You can't just pick the whole album now.
You know, yeah, well, and with Frank Zappa, we had 20, you know, we had 40 albums to listen to.
And, like, I'm taking all of side one of this one.
That's right. With the Posies, at least we only had like 12 or 13 or something.
Yeah.
All right. And Joe Skyward, who we mentioned earlier, passed away last year as well.
Yeah.
It's a shame, but yeah.
So the band has been compared to the Hollies, but I think we could also very easily compare them to the Oneaters or to any of those kind of, even certain eras of the Beatles' career, we compare them to.
I think so. Some Squeeze as well. It's funny how they relied so heavily on the really tight harmonies for the early albums and not so much in the later ones.
Yeah,
they're exactly. Almost like they're working in different parts of the studio or something. And you don't get those tight harmonies in those second ones, but very Everly Brothers-esque in their harmonies on the first three or four albums.
And for a while they made it a full-on career of showing up on compilations and soundtracks.
Totally did.
They were on a compilation called Another Damn Seattle Compilation. They were on the Reality Bites soundtrack. They were on the DGC Rarities. They were on the Basketball Diaries. They sang The Hollies in Reverse. They were on the soundtrack to the movie Hype, which if you haven't seen, find it and see it. They were on A Small Circle of Friends, Just So Say Noel, which is one of those Just Say albums, I'm thinking.
It is, yes. It was the Christmas one.
And I figured with Noel.
Yeah. They did a song called Christmas on
there. Is it good?
It is good, yeah.
Okay.
I've got it in my library, and I've given it 3 stars, so I think I liked it.
Okay. And then they did Home Alive and Together We're Not Alone.
Interesting. That's not all, too. They were on a Not Lame sampler called Not Lame Supercharged Flashlight Pops.
Too long of a title.
It's way too long of a title. They were on a Big Star tribute album called called Big Star Small World, and they contributed a song called What's Going On, and a Zombies tribute
cover?
Album.
Cover? Like, What's Going
yes.
On?
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, but no, not that one, though. Okay. What's Going On wasn't by Big Star. Just a similar title.
Okay.
They spell on A-H-N, whereas Marvin Gaye spelled it O-N.
Okay.
And,
the traditional also, spelling of on.
That's right. And also on a Zombies tribute album called The World of the Zombies with covers, two covers on that one, Leave Me Be and Brief Candles.
Oh, wow. I didn't know about those two.
Yeah. So when
did that come out?
1994. So very early on in their career.
Incredible.
Yes.
Okay. So there.
So yeah, if you're doing a compilation album, give these guys a call. They'll probably contribute something.
Brian, listen to your own advice.
I should, right? A cover. Oh, when am I doing my cover compilation album? I need to do that. I need to hurry up and do that. All right.
And we already have the song picked for him.
Do we?
That thing you do.
Oh, the Oneaters. Yes, yeah. They need to cover the Oneaters.
Yeah.
I'm never going to call them the Wonders. I'm going to always call them the Oneaters. Because of that movie. All right. You're seeing Posies in concert, and they come out on stage, and they do their set, and they close, and then they come back out for their encore and play their biggest song that you know is the one that they have to include, or else, you know, it's a mistake. If you're a band, that is where you play your biggest song, right? Like the first song coming out of the encore, because that's what you want them.
Unless you're Tone Loc and you sing it at the first, the middle, the end, and the encore.
Well, yeah, okay, that's a good, that's a very good example. What song are they doing? What is their Stairway to Heaven song?
Okay, so I picked I May Hate You Sometimes, because it's off the first album. Your old song stands good as good of a chance as any to being on there. Also, it's singable. People like that one. Then I picked Golden Blunders and Dream All Day is on my list. But the song,
I would add a couple more I would add to that list. Okay. I would add Suddenly Mary.
Really good
because
choice.
If the one you mentioned wasn't a calling card, if you meant Blind Eyes Open isn't a calling card, then Suddenly Mary is a great calling card.
Yes.
And maybe that's it. Okay. Flavor of the month, maybe.
Maybe. That's not a bad one either. I still think it's going to be Dream All Day, though. I think Dream All Day is the pick.
I think you're right. All right, let's pull up setlist.fm. And Dream All Day, number two on the list.
What?
Yes, number one is Solar Sister, also from that same album, though. Also,
I really don't like Solar Sister. They should pick that one. I don't like Solar Sister.
It's my third or fourth favorite song from that album. Also, Frosting on the Beater. So I could see that.
Everyone's opinion can be wrong. I get it.
Keep in mind that their biggest touring era looks like it was that time between 93. Well, no, I take that back. In 2005, they did 114 tours.
Shows.
Wow. I'm sorry, it shows. Yes. Crazy. Well, so Solar Sister, Dream All Day, Throwaway, Please Return It. Please Return It's a good song. Flavor of the Month. Burn and Shine, Everybody is a Bleepin' Liar, Grand Heart, Ontario. It's funny. It isn't even until you get to a tie for 10th place with Any Other Way that you get anything from Dear 23, and then you get stuff like Suddenly Mary. I'm scrolling down. I have not even Golden Blunders is like 35th on the list.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. It's crazy.
Maybe it's in a range where they can't typically sing it. Kind of like All in the Groove is a song that Blues Traveler really loves, but they can't always play it because the key it's written in is hard on his voice. So maybe Golden Blunders falls in that same party.
It could be. Who knows? Crazy. Well, there you go. There's your setlist.fm lineup of the Posies. Let's say we're programming their music, though. Let's say that we're in charge of their tour. In addition to their greatest hits, of course, here are the 11 songs. to say that they do as part of this our set list right here. Number one, not just my favorite Posies song from my favorite Posies album, but I would say one of my 10 favorite songs of all time.
That's some pretty high praise.
That's extremely high praise because there's a lot of other stuff in there, but it is the song Flood of Sunshine. It is the closing song on Dear 23. I want you to go buy the song, 99 cents, spend the money, cheapskates, and or at least pull it up in Spotify and close your eyes, put headphones on and listen to it. Maybe even if you're going to open your eyes, have the lyrics in front of you, pull up the lyrics online and look at the lyrics. But
don't do
what
it
I want
when you're
you
driving.
Don't do it when you're driving, please. But what I want you to mostly focus on isn't the lyrics. The lyrics are great. Isn't the songwriting. It is the guitar solo that seems to be wafting through the air like like smoke. I mean, it's like it's in this upper level above you, kind of floating around, and it's moving to the left and moving to the right, like it's a disembodied guitar hovering around the room around you. And it's and what's great about it too is that when you think the guitar solo's done, it like starts petering out, and like, all right, we're gonna get back to the thing. And there's kind of that one little string that's kind of still playing on a sustain. And then it kind of pulls back in, and you start getting the drums, and the guitar comes back in. And it's just like, it gives me goosebumps just talking about it, because it's for me, the greatest guitar solo of all time.
Isn't it also their epic too?
It could be. What is it? It is,
runs like 7 minutes, doesn't it?
It runs, where is it? Flood of Sunshine, 8 minutes, 22 seconds. Yeah. And I think that is their epic. There's a 6.5 minute song on Frosting on the Beater. Yeah, that's definitely their epic. And again, if I'm at a concert, it's not one of their Stairway to Heaven songs, but for me, it would be. Like, this would be something I would say, you're closing with this, and I want one spotlight on John Auer when he's playing this, this guitar solo, unless it's Ken Stringfellow, in which case I want the spotlight on Ken Stringfellow. I don't know. But this, I don't know who's doing the guitar
solo. I could
solo.
Easily see this be in the concert setting where they do their solos and their introductions, and Ken Stringfellow on guitar, diddly, and here's John Auer on guitar, and so-and-so on bass, and here's our drummer. And he goes, bum 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 bum, and then they go back into it.
It's funny. It's like, it's such a... it's such a great song. And it's funny because I'm opening my playlist with it because I love it so much. Usually I'd save the biggie for last, right? Oh no, this one, it's like, I'm putting it up top. By the way, while we were doing that, I found cause I was curious as to who's doing the solo, and, I'm looking to see. Okay. It's him then. It's okay. John Auer playing. Short hair.
Yes.
Ken Stringfellow, longer hair, skinnier dude.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it is John Auer doing the solo there. I'm queuing this up. I'm going to watch it as soon as we're done.
It's good to have goals, Brian.
I know. I had to choose something achievable, too. Isn't that great? All right. Second song on my list is Scattered. This is from the new album, newest album, Solid States. Really good.
Anytime you want me, oh, 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 I'll fill your silences. Anytime you want me, oh, 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 I'll be your comfort.
And it's just got a really cool, a really cool arrangement to it, using some very non-traditional instruments for the Posies, some synthesizer-y stuff, and it feels modern, but what's really cool about it is it still feels like it has that foundation that the Posies is built on. The next track is the song that comes right after Scattered, which is called Unlikely Places, and it's also on Solid States. This song so easily could have been a Neil Finn song. Like, if you listen to the song and think to yourself, Neil Finn doing these vocals, boom, it fits perfectly. You could think of Glenn Tilbrook singing these vocals. It's that finely crafted a song. And I think that's not saying that it's a song that anybody could have done. I think it's saying this is a good, solid pop song. Good, solid power pop song.
So we'll throw this in now. The Spotify... system does not have Solid States in
so
those two songs will not be on the Spotify list. I didn't skip them for my own personal gain.
Sure.
They're just not there.
Fair enough.
It's not like that In Excess song that will not go named, and it's not like I feel about the Spirit of Radio.
Next track comes from Frosting on the Beater. It's 20 Questions.
Guarded and closed in before he had chosen.
and I picked this chord progression.
Pressicon. Chord progression. More typos in the show notes this time from me. 20 questions from Frosting on the Beater. Good, really, like you said, really good chord progression in that one. And I'm a sucker for you getting the first three chords and thinking you know what's going to come next, and it doesn't. And it's a different chord. And it's like, oh, now you got me. You've
They're
totally
very, very good at this.
They totally
that,
are.
That move is something they're very good at. You think, oh, I know how this is going to, oh.
Right. That's the Posey's finishing move.
Yeah.
The chord switch up. Fifth is Every Bitter Drop. This was a non-album track that they included on the single for Ontario, and then they, of course, later included it as part of that that compilation, so to speak, success. It's a great tune. And then, yeah, I'm throwing in as my bonus track, I'm throwing in their cover of Surrender by Cheap Trick. It doesn't feel right for me not to include a cover. Well, she also told me to stay away. You'll never know what you'll catch. Just the other day, I heard of some soldiers falling off. Some Indonesian drum is going around. So I'm throwing it in here.
You have to outcover me, don't you?
I do. I do have to outcover you. It's in my job description.
When we do Dream Theater, I'm going to put all covers on there just to show you up.
Perfect. Perfect. Everybody take a drink.
All right. As much as you love Flood of Sunshine, I have that much love for the song I'm going to lead mine off with.
Impossible. It's impossible that you love a song, any song in the world, as much as I love Flood of Sunshine.
Okay, you're probably
I'm kidding.
I'll be honest with you. You seem to have some sort of weird, intimate connection with that thing that is a little
weird,
uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah.
But Start a Life off the album Success. When it starts, it has this kind of weird computery drum, cheap drum machine start to it, but then loads into this full kind of aquatic sounding music, and then they start singing on top of it. And it's a great, great song. When all I find is everything complicated. And this is absolutely my favorite Posey song. And as much as I feel about, like, you know, Johnson's Airplane and some of the ones we've covered that I really have some affection for, this falls into that category. Again, it might not be that take it to bed with you kind of love that Brian has.
is that what you're saying? Okay. Okay, good.
But I do really love this piece of music. And from what I understand, you would have put it on your list.
Yeah, I totally would have. I really liked it. I was in the process of writing it, adding it to my list, and then I looked down and I saw that it was in yours. So I was like, all right, fair enough. I'll back off of that one.
And then the other one that I claimed, I think when we said we were doing the Posies, I actually said, I'm putting the song on my list, you can't. And it's their version of King Midas in Reverse from the Sing Hollies in Reverse. It's also in their Dream All Day Greatest Hits. I break you and destroy you.
That in quite a few things. It's a great cover, and it kind of, you know, hearing it definitely says these guys are cut from the same cloth as the Hollies.
And it's not a very unique version of it as compared to the original, but it's right. A really, really good version of it compared to the original.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I picked the first song of theirs that I actually really liked. I heard, what's that first song on Failure? Blind Eyes Open. I heard Blind Eyes Open. And then the next one was that I May Hate You Sometimes, but I'll Always Love You.
Here we are, only been a couple of years, maybe longer.
And that's actually the first song of theirs I actually really liked. It was the first song that I put like on a mixtape for myself. It was the first song of theirs that I kind of would sing along to. So there's some you know, good memories to it there, and I really do like that piece of music.
Yeah,
And that's on Failure. Then I picked two from one of their newer albums. I picked two from Blood Candy. I picked Plastic Paperbacks. And the reason I liked it, kind of goes back to that chord progression we were talking about, where it's constructed so unconventionally. There's no, it's not following any kind of musical construction rules that we typically think of. It just kind of is put together, and it's awesome because everything is kind of a surprise. And then I picked Cleopatra Street from Blood Candy because it was just catchy. And it's, after hearing, like I said before, they're kind of a down band, and many times they have these great upbeat sounds.